Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
You know, the sports world, rightfully so, turning its attention to the Super Bowl and everything that the Super Bowl game will be. Whether it's a good Super Bowl or not doesn't really matter. All the hype will be all about the Patriots and the Rams. But there is something going on in the NBA. And last night, I don't even want to say it's the icing on the cake, to use a cliche, or the cherry on the sundae, because I have absolutely no idea at what part of the dessert we are at with James Harden. But he scored 61 points last night against the Knicks. If you've been following this, it is a remarkable run of scoring. He is doing this without Chris Paul. He's doing it without Clint Capella. He is basically taking this team on his back and just doing whatever he has to do to put points up. To give, they are 5-5 over their last 10 games. So the Rockets are not on this 12, 13-game win streak. He is doing this to keep them in games and to keep them alive. They only beat the Knicks last night by 4 points. Harden had 61. He's not getting the same kind of help from other players. He's averaging 36 points per game. He has 20 games or 21 games now in which he has scored 30 or more points. It's remarkable, absolutely remarkable. He is tearing up this league. I think he's averaging over 45 points over his last 10. The scoring is remarkable, but again, it comes with the caveat that the Rockets, again, are 5-5 over their last 10, so they're playing basically 500 ball over their last 10 games when Harden is just scoring and scoring all the time. And he's doing it without getting there's no assists coming his way. They only had 10 assists as a team last night.
No, I think it's an NBA record now. It's like 263 straight points without an assist.
Yeah, that's just how it works.
And
with Harden,
over the last five or six games, he's averaging over 45 points per game,
which is difficult. It's the most ridiculous. Difficult way to score. Like if you're not getting help, it's means that every time you have the ball, you're basically taking it up you're doing it yourself, and still lit him up for 61 points. It's a show within a show. And I know a lot of emphasis is going to be on football, and rightfully so. We've got to give a peek to the NBA. I know it's January, and we haven't gotten heated up yet. What James Harden is doing is absolutely remarkable, fantastic from a scoring perspective. And we are seeing a real show these last few games, last month, I should say, of Harden's extraordinary showcase of scoring without without some of the key teammates for the Houston Rockets.
Well, we're moving on.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're celebrating the TV shows of 1982. 1982, on this date, the Super Bowl took place between the San Francisco 49ers and the Cincinnati Bengals. So this is the Jeffersons. This is a spinoff of All in the Family. One of many spinoffs of All in the Family. A very funny show. So that's got to be one of the top shows of 1982, right?
Yep,
I like to think so. So yeah, that was it. Sherman Hensley.
Yep,
played George Jefferson.
No, I mean, all the shows that you've heard so far, they were all in the top 20.
Okay,
in 1982.
Okay. Very good.
Some I've had
very
to good. Skip over because they didn't have theme songs. Like obviously the number one rated show this week was the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Number two was 60 Minutes, but I can't for the life of me bring us in with the ticker.
Just a tick, 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 tick.
Although it would sound cool.
So these are the shows of 82. Yeah, Jefferson's. He owned dry cleaning. Dry cleaning, sir?
Yeah, I think that's
his
what
it was.
His
son was Lionel.
Yep. And he had a maid.
He had a maid. It was Marla Gibbs, I think it was the actress's name. And she was like, she always gave him lip.
She was sassy.
She was sassy. It was funny. It was good stuff. Yeah, it was a good show.
And then that introduced us to the Wheezy.
Yeah, Wheezy. That's right. That was a good show. They did a Denny's ad or an IHOP ad years later. Remember that?
Well, do you remember, it was an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like the final season.
Yeah, that's
right. And they were selling the house. And they brought back all the iconic families from like the early 80s.
So I remember that. Yeah.
They had the Jeffersons checking out the house. They had what's his name? Philip Drummond.
That's right. That's right. From Different Strokes.
Yeah, they had him checking out the house.
That's cool. That is cool. All right. So USA Today, boldly, I would say, and I like when people do this because it's not easy to do. They ranked all 52 Super Bowls leading into Super Bowl week this year. All right. Do you want to take a guess, Ron, at the Super Bowl that they picked as the number one Super Bowl of all time?
I believe I read this, too. So I'm feeling
so
really,
you're kind of cheating in a way, but
I'm
not
kind
really.
Of cheating. But you know what? God, I mean, it had to be a Falcons Patriots.
It was Falcons Patriots Super Bowl 51 was considered the greatest Super Bowl by USA Today because it
outside
lacked nothing.
Atlanta.
Yep, outside of except for you people in Atlanta, it lacked nothing. 31 unanswered points. The game went into overtime. It was a then record 466 yards passing for Brady. And Belichick and Brady each earned their fifth Super Bowl ring that had never been done before by coach quarterback. Also, it was just remarkable how looked like it was going to be a blowout, and then the Patriots came roaring back. It was 28-3, and I mean all of the things that you get from that Super Bowl, and it made him the greatest Super Bowl. I'm going to go through the top five that they selected to give you an idea. Now, I personally thought the best Super Bowl of all time was the number two choice, which was Super Bowl 42 between the Giants and the Patriots, because I thought that Super Bowl was a textbook on how to throw away all of the pundits that believed that you were going to be blown out, come up with a really good game plan, stick to that game plan, and come up with the biggest upset in Super Bowl history. The Patriots were not just favored in this Super Bowl. They were favored by a lot in this Super Bowl, and they were undefeated and going for 19-0. I mean, there were people predicting that this would be one of the bigger blowouts in Super Bowl history, and the Giants were just going to, they were in the same category as the Patriots. But Giant fans, like my father, for example, pointed out that the Giants played the Patriots close in a game that did matter to the Patriots at the end of the season. They wanted to finish the season 16-0. They weren't resting guys and chilling out. That was a game that mattered, and the Giants played very well against them. And Plaxico Burress caught the touchdown in the end zone. I did a Super Bowl show. It's funny. I was doing a Super Bowl show at the time in Colorado Springs, and we were having a local Colorado Springs, quote-unquote, celebrities on, you know, coach of the hockey team, newscasters. Like, we got all of them to come on to give their Super Bowl prediction, and it was pretty cool. So my father's been a lifelong Giants fan, so I had him on. He was the only one that guessed the Giants in a close game and actually predicted Plaxico Burress would catch a touchdown in the final minute of the game to win it for the Giants. And I made a clip of it and gave it to him because I was like, you're the only one that did this. Everyone else was like, I think it's going to be 42-10 Patriots. I think it's going to be 45-3 Patriots. I mean, remember the Patriots rolling over everybody. Brady threw 50 touchdowns. Randy Moss was on the team. The defense was good. The Giants. I thought the second one was the best just for what it meant. The third one on their list was Patriots Seattle. You catch a theme here by any chance of the top Super Bowls all involving a particular team and a particular coach and quarterback? Patriots over the Seahawks, Marshawn Lynch not running the ball, and Malcolm Butler coming up with the interception. I hate to admit this because I like Super Bowls a lot. I don't really remember much about this game other than that play. Like, I don't remember how they got to that point. I don't remember much about the game leading up to it. So I don't know. It's a memorable Super Bowl for the moment.
That is kind of funny. Yeah.
I don't remember much about who scored, how they scored. I remember the Seahawks driving down the field and a great catch down the sideline. Was it by Doug Baldwin, I think, who caught the ball? Maybe somebody else.
It was, Phil Lockett or something. It almost felt like it was a Hail Mary.
Yeah, exactly.
Pass that he caught. But I also remember, I seem to remember like the drive preceding that. I think Brady to Edelman a couple of times.
To Edelman, yeah. Yeah, that probably
seems to make sense. But yeah, I mean, really, my only image that I really remember is that one play.
Yep. And then there was Left Shark at halftime, Katy Perry's halftime show.
Hey, you know what? Which, by the way, I really enjoyed that halftime show.
Oh, Katy Perry's halftime show when she came in on a lion? That was pretty awesome. That was very good. That was a very good halftime show.
Because she's fun to look at.
She is fun. She is fun. The fourth best Super Bowl is the one, the second version of the one we're celebrating today between the 49ers and the Bengals. That was Montana hitting John Taylor going on a 92-yard drive. We actually talked about this earlier this week, the John Candy game. Number five in the top five of Super Bowls, according to USA Today, Pittsburgh and Arizona. This is Santonio Holmes' catch in the end zone. This had a really cool play. This, at the end of the first half, James Harrison returned an interception 100 yards for a touchdown for the Steelers. Now, he was running down the field with the clock expired, meaning all that the Cardinals had to do was push him out of bounds anywhere, and that was it. They would have gone to the locker room at halftime, and he rumbled into the end zone for a touchdown. I remember screaming loudly the whole way through. However long James Harrison took to run 100 yards, that's how loud I was screaming. Larry Fitzgerald, though, caught a touchdown. It was scary because he caught a touchdown. And the Cardinals had a chance at the end because Kurt Warner had the ball at midfield, was chucking it downfield. And I was kind of nervous. But the Steelers held on and won 27-23. Now, the bottom five, because we used to do top five, bottom five during the season. So I thought it would be kind of cool to do the bottom five Super Bowls, according to USA Today. The bottom five Super Bowls include the following. I'm going to count them. I'm going to go from 48 down to 52. 48 was Super Bowl VII in 1977 between the Cowboys and the Broncos. I'll take their word for it. It was held indoors at the Superdome. Broncos turned the ball over 8 times. Blah. Harvey Martin and Randy White were the MVPs. The 49th best Super Bowl, or bottom up, is the Dolphins over the Vikings in 73. Again, I'll take your word for it. Larry Zonka rushing for a Super Bowl record 145 yards. Bob Greasy only threw 7 passes in the game. Blah. 50. I remember this one, 2000. It was the Ravens and the Giants. Remember this one was held in Tampa? Ugh. The only thing I remember about this game is it had back-to-back kickoff returns for touchdowns. That was the only touchdown I think the Giants got in the game. Is returning a kickoff for a score.
And what year was that? That was
2000, 2001, January 2000.
The other important story from that Super Bowl was the Ray Lewis incident.
Ray Lewis, because a year before, he was in jail.
I thought that was the year.
No. No, it was in Atlanta. The Ray Lewis story goes, he was in Atlanta attending the Super Bowl between the Titans and the Rams. That was Super Bowl 34. And he was arrested for, there was this murder, and it was a limo, and guys had blood, and obstruction of justice. And he was in jail, and then he got out of jail. He pleaded, I guess, and got out of jail. And then he was the Super Bowl MVP a year later, a calendar year later. He was the Super Bowl MVP. And a lot of people didn't absorb that very well. They didn't like that very much. 51, Super Bowl VI between the Cowboys and the Dolphins. Again, take your word for it, I guess. But they don't really like these old Super Bowls. I wonder if a young guy wrote this and was like, I don't even know what these Super Bowls were. I'm just going to put them down at the bottom because they're boring. But you know what the worst Super Bowl was? The worst of all time. We would remember this. It's in our lifetime.
My guess would be. Well, I would have guessed
something in the '80s.
I would have guessed Niners Chargers.
Yeah, Niners Chargers.
Not just because I'm a Chargers fan, but just because
that was not competitive.
That was not competitive at all. Like one team didn't even get on the bus.
There's even a worse non-competitive Super Bowl.
Okay.
And the worst Super Bowl, according to USA Today, was Super Bowl 48. Seattle 43, Denver 8.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason that they put this as the worst is because this was so hyped as the number one offense and the number one defense. The unbelievable offense of Peyton Manning against the amazing defense of the Seattle Seahawks. And it wasn't even close. Manning got like a safety on like the first play of the game. The ball went over his head and was out of sync the whole game. This was such an annihilation. It was unbelievable. But I agree with you. I told you this with that Super Bowl. By the way, that ranked 44th on their list.
Okay.
I was playing ping pong at halftime. I barely remember. I didn't even really watch it in the second half.
No, like I said before, the only thing I really remember from that Super Bowl was that I won. It was either the halftime numbers boxes thing or the end of the game.
But oh, yeah.
A little cash out of it.
Got a little cash.
But other than that was just god-awful.
Some honorable mentions. Tampa Bay-Oakland was a bad Super Bowl. Raiders versus Redskins, also bad. Packers-Oakland in 67, Super Bowl II. they rated that bad. So there you go. That's what USA Today's got for top five, bottom five for their Super Bowl. It's kind of interesting. Patriots in the top three, by the way, of the best Super Bowls of all time. And remember, because I said this yesterday, I know the Super Bowl is going to be close because the Patriots are in it. And they have given us some of the great moments in Super Bowl history.
Yep.
Because the games are close. They don't blow out anybody in the Super Bowl. 800-777-2907. Coming up, more Hall of Fame thoughts from baseball. Do they have a problem with Bonds and Clemens? And what is Roy Halladay's family going to see when they induct Roy into the Hall of Fame in July? That is coming up next on SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
I'm going to take a shot at this one, and we're doing Throwback Thursday 1982 TV themes, celebration of Super Bowl 16. I'm going to take a shot here. Is this Falcon Crest?
Ding.
I got it?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes. This is
Nailed it.
Oh, thank you. This is another show I was not allowed to watch. Nope. I think William Devane, who's on, like, he sees, like, I'm William Devane. Get your money in gold or silver. He's the guy on TV doing that. I think William Devane starred in Falcon Crest.
I'll take your word for it. I never watched it. I wasn't allowed to either.
I wasn't allowed to watch this show. Like, this was an adult program. I could watch some silliness, like a car jumping over a ravine selling moonshine, but I could not watch Falcon Crest.
Nope.
No, that was off limits. Time for bed. When your battery loses its power, you lose your ability to get out, get around, and get things done. When it's time to replace your battery, trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the Superstart battery that's the exact fit for your vehicle. Whether it's reliable economy, hardworking premium, or powerful extreme, O'Reilly Auto Parts has the Superstart battery you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I'm sorry. I have to look this up because Falcon Crest did have a very attractive woman on the program, but I'm trying to remember who it was. She was like a blonde, like, oh, maybe that was Dynasty. I don't know. Again, these were way too adult for me for these programs. I'm trying to figure it out. I think it was, I can't get it fast enough. Goodness gracious. It starred, nope, don't have it. This is a newer version of Falcon Crest that was around. So no, I don't want. So I don't know. That was one of those shows. It was like Dynasty and Dallas and
Falcon Crest.
All
dealing with the same thing. Rich white
people,
families.
Right? Rich white families.
and the troubles they get themselves into.
Right. Could just too much money, had problems. Oh, goodness gracious.
Just proving the point that money does not buy happiness.
That's right.
No, this one starred Jane Wyman.
Okay. All right. So this didn't have Robert Devane in it. I thought it was in this show.
Jane Wyman was the central
figure. Jane Wyman, is that Reagan's ex-wife?
That's Reagan's ex-wife.
Really?
Yep.
She was on Falcon Crest?
She was the main person on Falcon Crest. Also starred a little-known actor named Lorenzo Lamas.
Lorenzo Lamas was on there, too?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And then see David Selby. Never heard of him. Susan Sullivan.
I'm thinking of another show.
You might be thinking of Dynasty.
I might be thinking of that. Yeah. I might be thinking about another show because, man, they were all, you know, my goodness, they were all good looking people back in the. You're right. You were totally right about that, though. No. William Devane. I'm sorry. William Devane was on Knott's Landing.
Okay. Oh,
that's what it was.
Another rich white family.
That's another rich white family show that was on major television. That was Knott's Landing.
Okay. Was there a theme in the 80s?
Yeah. Everybody made a lot of money. Everybody made a tremendous amount of cash.
And that's what we wanted to watch.
That's what
we wanted to sit around and watch all these people have issues, even though they had all the money.
Yeah, Joan Van Ark was on that show, so that's the show I was thinking about. Hey, listen, I was a child, so forgive me if my memory banks.
I'll tell you this:
I wasn't allowed to watch them.
There was a hot blonde in Dynasty.
That was Linda Evans.
Linda Evans.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, her and Joan Collins used to fight it out. So for the attention of Charlie,
and you know, there was another hot blonde in Dynasty. I know. Girl. I know you know it.
I know. I can't. I'm drawing a blank.
Heather.
Heather Locklear.
There you go.
That's right. Heather Locklear. God, yes. Okay. Very good. Look at us. Look at us. Look at us going down 80s women.
Yeah.
that we kind of were curious about at a very young age in 82.
We were allowed to watch the commercials and be like, oh, I know. Look at her.
We saw the promos for it, right? Look at that hair. God, that woman is really gorgeous. I don't know what gorgeous means, but I think I like her.
That is funny. You got Dallas, Falcon Crest, Dynasty, Knox Landing. There's a central theme to all those shows.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Massively wealthy white people just figuring out a way to get in trouble with each other. No family dinners, no, nothing.
Just trying to get by. Just trying to get by with their Scrooge McDuck money.
Exactly. Yesterday we talked about the Baseball Hall of Fame and Roy Halladay, who passed away in November of 2017 from a plane accident, is going to go into the Hall of Fame with no hat. His widow said that he wants to be remembered as just all of baseball. They don't want to point his career in one particular team or the other. They just want him to be a part of just Major League Baseball, which I think is pretty cool. And I know some people are like, no, he's got to have a hat. He should be a Phillies or a Blue Jay. No, I think this is a good idea. But I am curious from the conversation. Once we had the vote Tuesday night, there was a lot of processing and a lot of celebratory for Mariano Rivera and Edgar Martinez and Mike Mussina and Roy Halladay and his career. There was a lot of celebration of that. But then it didn't take long, and last night was really starting. People were starting to point out, hey, Bonds and Clemens, 3 years remaining. I don't know if there's a lot of time. It could skew younger. There are guys in the hall who did steroids, may not have gotten caught. We may not have known it. Why aren't they in the Hall of Fame? Are they going to be on the Hall of Fame? And is the Hall of Fame not a Hall of Fame if these two guys aren't in it? And it does make me kind of process. It had me processing this last night. I kind of hope Bonds and Clemens gets in, because as I've said many times, I think baseball's steroid problem is also its own sin, as well as the sins of the players. I think everybody in baseball was pretty complicit on it. I think Major League Baseball really loved the home run race. I don't think you had to be a brainiac to figure out something wasn't right, but nobody really wanted to do anything. Nobody even wanted to pretend to do anything. It really took an act of Congress, if you will. If you remember in 2005, when Congress started going, hey, okay, let's figure this out, because these are illegal drugs and kids are starting to use them, and we need to figure out what's going on. They started bringing those guys in. And yes, there were all, you know, Bonds was never caught, right? I mean, but we knew. And Clemens, kind of the same thing, went on, you know, got that trial for testifying in front of Congress. And again, we knew. But the reality of it is that I kind of am hoping that the Hall of Fame voters go, hey, listen, let's figure out a way because keeping them out, I'm not comfortable with it. I got to be honest with you. I'm not comfortable with it. They are a part of this game. If it's going to be called the Hall of Fame and Museum, there is something about their contributions, whether tainted or not, that I think need to be somehow in the Hall of Fame and acknowledged. Roger Clemens is a 7-time Cy Young Award winner. Barry Bonds is a 7-time MVP. Those things just aren't irrelevant. I mean, those things aren't just because of steroids. There was some talent there. And again, if you're talking about a time and place and an era where that, you know, baseball was a part of it too, but nobody wanted to test. Nobody wanted to do anything. Nobody wanted to address it in collective bargaining. Nobody wanted it because it meant so much to baseball to have the home run chase and have McGuire and Sosa duke it out in the 90s, and Barry Bonds for his part, what he was doing in San Francisco. But the reality of it is Major League Baseball should figure out a way to deal with the steroid era, because I think it's important. And I think it's important when you're talking to your kids. If your kid's a baseball fan, I brought this up. The biggest fear that I thought people would have with the steroid era was explaining it to kids who, if they were into baseball and were really analyzing old stats, how would you explain the late 90s and 2000s, the early part of 2000s? Like, how would you explain not just McGuire and Sosa? How would you explain Brady Anderson and Luis Gonzalez and Rafael Palmeiro and guys that were hitting tremendous amounts of home runs, and it just looked like there were home runs being hit out of every ballpark and by every single player in the league? how do you process that? And I think by putting these two guys in the Hall of Fame, it continues to open that conversation up. You can have a conversation about what baseball was like in a period of time when we didn't really have a handle on the steroids. We've been celebrating Super Bowl 16. What was it like? We'll do the rewind and continue to process Super Bowl 53 next on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I didn't know the Love Boat was still kicking around in 1982. I guess it was. Was it the later edition?
I think so, yeah.
Different kind of cast?
Most of the same cast, but what's her name was a little bit older. She had more of a role. She had more
Vicky.
Jobs. Vicky, thank you.
The little daughter, the captain's daughter, who basically grew up on the Love Boat.
Yep.
It was called the Love Boat because people found relationships on the boat, or was it just a romantic cruise that had crime? Well, I don't remember the show.
Yep.
Is that it?
I think all the above.
I know it's like one of those shows that had like celebrity guest stars.
Yeah, it was
like famous, you could just do a week on the Love Boat, get paid, and that was a big deal. So, goodness gracious.
Yeah, we need a show like that now where just a random celebrity, or it wasn't just one, it was usually a couple of them.
Right, exactly. And the Love Boat had Isaac the bartender. How awesome was he? And then Gopher, he became a congressman. Fred Gandy?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what happened to
and then Bernie.
Bernie Koppel. He was the doctor. He was the doctor that was, but he was always sexing on the cruise people. That he was always trying to hit on the women that came on the boat. Yeah. It's a creepy doctor.
You can't do that now.
And Gavin McLeod played Kevin James's like uncle in King of Queens later. It was really funny. But he was the captain of the Love Boat back in the day. Goodness gracious. I tell you, 1982 shows are fantastic. That's great. The reason we're bringing up 1982 television shows is because this is Super Bowl rewind time. And then on this date in Super Bowl history, the San Francisco 49ers beat the Cincinnati Bengals at the Pontiac Silverdome. Remember that place? The Pontiac Silverdome in Detroit. And the Super Bowl, this was Super Bowl 16. And for a long time, this Super Bowl was one of the top Super Bowls in television history. I don't know why particularly it was. I don't know why it was so appealing, but it had Joe Montana and Dwight Clark, and they were young, budding superstars, and that might have been it. The Cincinnati Bengals had Kenny Anderson coming off a win against the Chargers in a very frigid AFC championship game. But one thing about this Super Bowl to remember is it was the first time the Super Bowl was played in a cold weather area, not cold weather. They had a game in Tulane Stadium in New Orleans that was 39 degrees, but this was the first time the Super Bowl was played in a basically winter climate, despite the fact that it was going to be in a dome. They always went to sunny places like Miami and LA and New Orleans and Houston for their January showcase. Well, this is the first time they went to Michigan. So the day of that game, as you would expect, there was a snowstorm, an ice storm, and fans had to park their cars and walk and slide to the stadium. But it was, again, it was a Super Bowl that I think was ushering in, Joe Montana and the 49ers. And I don't think we knew about it at the time. I don't think we realized it at the time, how awesome that was going to be, how good that tandem of or Super Bowl Bill Walsh's teams were going to be. It was a pretty big deal. I don't remember much about the Cincinnati Bengals, except Kenny Anderson was the quarterback, Forrest Gregg was the coach, and Chris Collinsworth was in that Super Bowl, played in that Super Bowl. But I remember the Niners. I remember the Niners being a really, really good team. Not because they beat the Cowboys, but just really good team. And it was in 1982 on this date. Diana Ross sang the national anthem, as you would expect, right? Motown, Detroit. And the halftime show was, again, I bring it up because they've been getting a lot of run, Up With People and the salute to the 60s in Motown. Up With People got a lot of Super Bowl run. The kids that did the sing and dance troupe, They got a lot of Super Bowls under their belt. They don't get it anymore.
It's just amazing when you look back how far we've came.
Oh, I know. All right. That's all it was just, hey, let's do something cool. Let's do a tribute to something. Let's get up with people. Let's get a marching band. That's all we need. And now it is a show within a show. It's fantastic. So again, an ice storm prevented the 49ers from not making it on time, which on time means early enough to practice and work out, of course. But there was an ice storm before that game. And the Niners won their first of five Super Bowls that they have on their register. Because remember when Colin Kaepernick was going for, they were talking about the sixth. And Brady at the time hadn't had his sixth. And the Niners were about ready to get theirs if they had converted that one against Baltimore years ago.
No, so but think about what you just said right there. The 49ers were getting ready to get six, and then you go, and Brady hadn't gotten his six.
Right, exactly. That's okay. I know, right? That's what we're doing.
You weren't talking Patriots.
Talking Patriots. I was talking Brady.
Brady.
He's changing the way we're having conversations. Are you kidding? I mean, he is totally changing the way we're having conversations. You're right. That's amazing. That's amazing. Montana had a touchdown run in that game. He also had a touchdown pass early in the game. And the Bengals were the AFC championship game, one of the coldest on record, and they had to go to a Super Bowl that was cold too. So feel bad for Cincinnati. Teams would meet up again in a rematch in Super Bowl 23, where the Niners won again. But this game wasn't as close. Despite it was 26-21, but it wasn't as close as the score indicated. The Bengals did score a touchdown late with like 10 seconds left to close the gap to five, but that's about it. The Niners had gone up 26-21 with a field goal like late in the fourth quarter. So that's our Super Bowl rewind for this date. This is the only one on the docket. And again, next week there'll be plenty because this is, once you get into the late 20s, man, you got multiple Super Bowls on multiple dates. I said earlier that I think one of the interesting matchups in Super Bowl 53 coming up is how Wade Phillips is going to orchestrate his defense against Brady and this offense that is very unpredictable, that doesn't adhere to any pattern or any theme, right? There is no identity to the offense. If they want to run, they ran the ball 46 times against the Chiefs. They'll run it as many times as Wade Phillips will let them run if they have to. But the pressure that he's going to have to get on Brady is going to be nullified by what the Patriots offensive line is going to do. That again, watch that matchup. Watch how good the Patriots offensive line is going to be with Dante Scarnecchia coaching that line. When they lost Nate Solder, he's a Pro Bowl. He's hard to replace. They have done it with guys that are not recognizable, and yet they are a cohesive unit these last couple weeks. To not have Brady get sacked against a great pass rush defense with the Chargers and what the Chiefs can do is really remarkable. That's a fantastic offensive line performance. Wade Phillips is a mastermind defensive guy, though, and I think that the way he's going to have to devise this game plan, he's got to get pressure, but he can't leave. He can't leave his defensive backs to cover multiple guys. Brady will just torch you. So I'm interested to see where the defense is going to go. This is the one thing about the Super Bowl that though you can't forget. Let's say the Patriots can just dice up the Rams defense. Let's say they can do that. Well, the Rams have the ability, despite Bill Belichick being a strong defensive mind, they have the ability to do that too. So the Sean McVay versus Belichick angle that people are talking about, right? His offense versus the defense of the Patriots. I think that is going to be a really important to watch because it's going to do two things for the Rams in the Super Bowl. Either A, it's going to allow them to score to build up a cushion like the Atlanta Falcons and see where that goes, maybe not make the same mistake the Falcons did. Or two, if McVay is successful, he can answer anything the Patriots are doing if the Patriots carve up Wade Phillips and his defense. So to me, what Sean McVay, who, by the way, happy birthday, turning 33 today, if he can devise an offensive scheme to counter the Patriots, who, again, that's their vulnerability, right? If there's one thing that people were nervous about going into these games against the Chargers and going in these games, a game against the Chiefs, was how the Patriots' defense was going to play, and they did pretty well, but still a vulnerability for the Pats. It is going to be how Sean McVay can do that, whether he has to get back in games or keep it close if it turns into one of those 45-42 kind of games, or he builds up a lead like Atlanta and then holds on to see what Brady and Belichick can do trying to get back into the football game. It's there's so many great matchups here. And again, this is not to knock Andy Reid and the Chiefs. I think they would have provided us a fantastically entertaining Super Bowl, because I think that Monday night game wasn't just, you know, a fluke. I think those two teams would have given us the same kind of offensive performance. But let's, I want to be honest here. I think this Super Bowl matchup, Belichick McVay, Pats, you know, against a young team, right? Old versus new, Boston, LA, that, all these angles, I think they're great, but it's going to boil down to the geniuses of Sean McVay and Wade Phillips, and what Bill Belichick will do both defensively, and Josh McDaniels offensively to an extent, with Dante Scarnecchia coaching an offensive line that has not allowed Brady to get the kind of pressure you need to beat Brady. And these are fascinating matchups if you like matchups. And I think it's going to play itself out in this game. Look, I hope the Rams don't go out to a 28-3 lead, because I think Sean McVay is smart enough to go, I'm not going to make the same mistake that the Falcons made. I was talking about this, I think yesterday, about Brady. Maybe it was Tuesday. Brady is just a couple of bonehead decisions by his opponent away from being 0-5 in Super Bowls in his last five. Right? I mean, dumb offensive minds, you know, dumb decisions by the Seahawks and the Falcons would have prevented Brady. That's not to take away from the performance. The performances were great. The comebacks were great. But you have to be honest in your assessment of what was happening in the Seattle game at the goal line. You have the goal line. You have the ball on the goal line, and you have Marshawn Lynch. You give him the ball, you're going to score. And yet, no, we're going to throw it in traffic. And if you're the Falcons, find me other games in the NFL where you're up 28-3 and lose. Why you go away from the strategy of a lead like that in the fourth quarter, in the third quarter, and in the fourth quarter? The strategy, everybody knows what you do when you have a big lead like that in terms of clock. You don't pour it on. You don't win with what brought you there. That's the stupidest saying in sports, right? Well, we're going to win with what brought us here. No, you win by making smart decisions based on circumstances in the game. If it means you run the ball, you run the ball. I don't care if you have Julio Jones. I don't care if you have Matt Ryan. You run the ball. You eat clock. You force them in field position to eat clock and use up their timeouts. You don't start chucking it around the field. Are you insane? That's what they were doing. Setting up Matt Ryan to get sacked. Setting up turnovers. And all the like. So the Patriots, again, not to take away from the their last two wins, very good wins, very good performances by Brady and his team. But those two opponents, Seattle and Atlanta, if they make the right decisions, if they do the right thing instead of trying to, again, win with what brought us here, Brady would be 0-5 going into this Super Bowl. Maybe more sympathetic, maybe not. I don't know. But that's the reality. McVay's not going to make that mistake. If McVay's offense can build a lead, he's going to figure out ways to slow the game, to speed up the game, to make that clock disappear. He's not going to go, well, we're going to do this and this and this because it's what we do. No, no, no. He's going to say, no, we do everything. There's no identity here. We'll do what we got to do to make that clock run faster. And I think that's going to be interesting. A lot of great matchups in this Super Bowl. Really can't wait to start really getting dissecting into it. 800-777-2907. Coming up next, a situation we all experience that's hazardous to your health, and you may not even know it. That's next.
SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Fantasy Island. Zipline, Zipline. Ricardo Montalban. This is another show I couldn't watch when I was a kid. I could watch the beginning.
Yep.
Could watch Tattoo do Zipline, Zipline. But
from
that
the
was
lighthouse.
I don't know what I'm assuming, and again, I never watched the show. I'm assuming the show was your wishes came true, right?
Well,
you went to this island.
Yeah,
whatever your wish was, you got it. You were,
or
was this
not your wish? Whatever your fantasy was,
whatever your fantasy was. Okay, which is probably why I wasn't allowed to watch it as a young lad.
Yeah, because some people might have had bad fantasies.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Like if I went to an island like that, it's definitely not made not for the younger audience.
And for network television, right?
Yeah. Best was mine on HBO.
Listen, was this a, I'm asking you as if you know, was this an island, like, was it a real place, like with real, were they angels, or was it like, was it a mystical island, and like people went there and paid money to go there, so that's, I'm assuming
the,
it was.
That's the mystery.
The mystery of the show is it. Mr. Rourke might have been a supernatural figure.
Maybe.
Because he granted wishes to people.
I like to think he was a genie.
I would think so, too.
Just so you know, instead of being in a bottle, he was trapped on this island. Which, by the way, is the island of Kauai.
Oh, that's right. All right. Very right. Good point. I just want to let people know that according to the New York Times now, they released reports on a study by the Texas A&M Transportation Institute. American commuters spend 42 hours per year stuck in rush hour traffic in Los Angeles, as you know. Mm-hmm. That figure is nearly twice as that, equivalent to more than 3 days in traffic in a given calendar year. It is also taking tolls on your psychological well-being, stemming from the sense of helplessness as we experience in traffic and its unpredictability. It is bad for your health to be stuck in traffic.
So those people desperately want to get to Fantasy Island.
That's right. They want to get out to Fantasy Island.
Their only fantasy is like, I just want to drive on a road where no one's in front of me.
You ever been in traffic and you act like the way you talk and act is so out of character that people around you are like, oh my God.
No, I've never. I mean,
I do all the time.
I've never been able to yell at. Are you talking about like yelling at cars or yelling at the traffic itself?
When we drive in, like if my family and I are ever traveling on the road and we're stuck in traffic, like I will start yapping. Like, I don't understand this. I'm like, why don't they just make this a 6-lane highway? I don't understand this. Why don't they make this an 8-lane highway? I mean, really, with all the money we pay in taxes, I don't understand why you can't get a system where the traffic flows. I don't understand why people have to go into that lane and that lane, and you're crossing lanes back and forth. My wife's like, you want me to drive? Are you good? No, I'm fine. I don't understand. Like, she's like, slow down. So I can understand this report being psychologically damaging to your health, because traffic, that's what it is.